It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Okay, so if you're like me here Wednesday, midday, day before the draft, you are done with the rumors, the rumblings, the whispers, the nuggets, the expectations around the league, people believe, the scuttlebutt. All of that can scuttle away for good. I am ready for picks. I am ready for players. I am ready for the actual draft, which we have been talking about. I don't know, what is the next level from ad nauseum? But that level since December, and it's finally here. We made it. That all said, what is today's episode about? I have one last organic grass-fed mock draft for you, just complete guesses, which files right under the category of the buzz and the scuttlebutt and the nuggets and the rumors and rumblings. But before we get to that, my final guess of what the Patriots will do on Thursday, Friday night, and then Saturday afternoon, we are going to cover a couple of topics. One, all your mailbag questions you asked this week. Jonathan Kraft reportedly being, quote, heavily involved in the Patriots decision-making at number three, and leftovers from my profile of Elliott Wolf, which I published here this morning, which is also a reason that when I said last episode, we'll be back on a regular schedule. We'll do Tuesdays. It'll be Fridays. It'll be back to the Pat's interference you know and love. That didn't happen because the telling of someone's life story and their journey and what it means and what it could lead to next just takes precedent over this mock draft, which I really wanted to do last night and just didn't have the energy for. So that is all coming here today. But sticking with Elliott Wolf, this is a story, again, you can find in the Boston Herald. It's on the Boston Herald website. I talked to close to 20 people, close to Elliott, among them four NFL GMs, three are on the record in that story. You have two ex-GMs. The one left out was Nick Caserio, who had glowing things to say about Elliott at the Combine. Went all the way back to Elliott's high school teachers, old colleagues in Green Bay, his close friends, his parents, team sources off the record about what things have really been like since he took over. And I will say this, you don't always get flowery, positive feedback doing these profiles, right? Like it's very common going to people close to someone who knows this is going to be in a public space, a part of their, you know, log in history, this story that's going to be about them, right? You know, obviously if it's a worthy enough story. But I did not come across anyone at all parts of his life, in all areas of his life, that had something less than neutral. I would say even just generally positive to say about Elliott. Which is to say, again, folks, on and off the record, in the Patriots building, all other parts of his life and across the country, I am an Elliott Wolf believer. And even within that context, because as someone who wanted to dive deeper than just like the father-son dynamic, right? His father's Ron Wolf. He's in the Hall of Fame, brought the Packers back, won a Super Bowl in the mid-90s. Others with the Raiders when he was Al Davis's right-hand man in personnel. Like, this was going to go deeper than that. I'm talking to all these people. And what I found, first of all, is that the footsteps trope, which is the most common one you'll find in Elliott's stories that have been documented, you know, again, since he was in Green Bay as a scout and rising all the way up the ranks, Cleveland for 2 years and now New England, is that that actually wasn't true. Because first of all, his father wasn't around when he was growing up, okay? His mother raised him, also raised an older brother, Jonathan, who has nothing to do with football nowadays, lives in Alaska on an island, helping run a vet clinic. And before that, when they were both at the same high school in Green Bay, was into aerospace and music and drama. So their parents allowed them to do whatever they liked. Elliott is not here just because of who his dad is and he really liked football. He was allowed to choose football and even quit football, which happened in high school. A decision that he had obviously to tell his dad. But according to his dad, who I spoke with about 45 minutes last week, They didn't really talk about it at length, which is all to say that this guy is a scout's scout. He was a quiet kid in high school who began to treat the game like an intellectual exercise because he was just too small. He was too slow. He was like a lot of us here at sports media. You're not going to cut it. Find another way to stay close to the game because the game's kind of done with you. All right. But around that same time, you know, talking to some high school teachers, one of whom said he was, quote, brilliant and understood nuance in a way this person had never experienced with another kid in her classroom. 33 years at Notre Dame Academy, which again, rich Catholic private school, was that he was a quiet, understated kid, exceptionally smart, kind of kept his own counsel. That spoke to a scout. Like the life of a scout is you sitting with yourself all the time, on the road, in the film room, sometimes after visits with players, digesting information and putting it out in a way that you observe things that others don't. You're all looking at the same tape, the pro days, the workouts, the drills, but what are you seeing that's different that will lead you closer to the truth? That is the measure of a scout. So yes, he does the same thing his father does, but this is a parallel path. He's not in the same footsteps. And so being around guys like Mike Holmgren and Andy Reid and then John Schneider, who I spoke to at length of the story, now the Seahawks GM, you know, Jason Light, the GM of the Buccaneers, who wasn't in Green Bay, but, you know, a great story about interviewing Elliott when he was 21 and showed up in Philadelphia and was like, yeah, your free agent board is errors. This guy signed elsewhere last week. That guy left for another team. And this was 2004 when the Eagles were going to the Super Bowl, as of course you know. So here's the thing. He is someone who is ready for this job. I've told you on this podcast before, officially 20 years in front office is unofficially 30. Schneider, Ron Wolf, Reggie McKenzie, Scott McLuhan, all these future GMs on that Green Bay staff in the middle of the 90s. He is not, though, again, to round out this picture of Elliott, a galvanizing leader of men. Like, he is a scout's scout. I'll say it again. Exceptionally smart, secure, and self-aware, and has made a fan or a friend of basically everyone in football that I talk to. And I don't think the crafts mind that at the top, right? Like, you can have a GM who's good in front of the media, and I think Elliott did a fine job. The other week wasn't great. That's not who he is. But what you see is what you get. This is an honest person who relates well enough to people, not just because, again, he was raised in football offices. His mother got her PhD in psychology, ran a part-time office from home growing up. So the best of them has made him someone now, even just at 42, who will lead this draft, which will define his legacy in a way that will be separate from Ron in the Patriots' future, is really, really interesting. To me. So those are leftovers. Oh, one final nugget, because this didn't make the story. And when you work on these, your brain is just packed with information that, you know, the way you're thinking about people and their family and how they grew up and their dynamics that you just can't share. And then when you finally do share it, you're like, what do I do with all this excess information? Well, you say it on a podcast, and then we're getting to the crafts here in a second. Ron Wolf, who got into football basically like Elliott did, when he had this interview that I just referenced, he's 21. He had graduated college. He's driving to Eagles headquarters for an interview, a low-level scouting position, gets in there and says, okay, your emergency board of free agents has multiple errors. Ron got into the business after working in Army intelligence in Berlin during the Cold War by coming back and writing teams who were then, you know, in pro football. And all of them rejected him. Rams, Chargers, goes on and on and on. So he starts writing, you know, the editor at Pro Football Illustrated to let him know there were some errors in this publication that is now Pro Football Weekly. And he writes often enough about this player is actually that tall or he weighs this much or this is his speed or this is where he played, not where you listed. The editor says, fine, why don't you come work for us? Okay. And right before he took that job, he had taken a train to Providence and then Boston, where he walked in 1960 to the offices of the original Boston Patriots, as he described them, in like this blue seersucker suit. I didn't know what seersucker was. But he walks from the train station all the way to where their offices were, then in the Fenway neighborhood, gets to the front door, says, can I have a job? You have a new team here. My references is what I know. And they say no. And the man just walks all the way back. So as much as Elliott is someone, you know, a son of Green Bay, there are enough smaller pieces here that kind of lead you back, not only just to parallel Ron's path, but in a place that there are connections. The Packers and Patriots have the most wins in the NFL, first and second, since Ron Wolf took over in 1992. Of course, met at the pinnacle of his career, Super Bowl 31, and now his son is back after he resurrected the NFL's first dynasty to revive its latest. And that starts Thursday. I guess you don't have to read the profile. I basically told you everything good that was in here. Though there are stories about him arguing with Belichick over Michael Parsons, finding Ramondre Stevenson, and lots more. So again, please give it a read. Okay. Jonathan Kraft. So as I am writing this story, digging in through all of my reporting over the last few weeks and couple of months, really, Diana Rossini reports for The Athletic that Jonathan Kraft is, quote, heavily involved in the decision-making at the number three overall pick, whether to take, presumably a quarterback, or to trade back. And Diana is a strong reporter. I have seen her move and shake at the combine, the owners' meetings. She knows what she's doing and who she's talking to. Now, our friends of the podcast, Tom Curran and Phil Perry of NBC Sports Boston, have since said, nope, Jonathan just wants to be in the loop. He's not a scout. He knows it. He's going to have his input, but he's not heavily involved. And I will say on my end, without any hard reporting there, that I categorically, this is the columnist hat coming on now, condemn any involvement from ownership in football decisions. Hell, in baseball decisions, in basketball decisions, in hockey decisions, you hire the people who have spent their lives learning this craft, and then you empower them, step back, and chill the hell out. This isn't to say they can't have any input. Again, you're the boss. You have the right to do that. But if you want your business to flow well, do as Robert Kraft has claimed to have done for the last 30 years. Hire your people. Let them do the work that you're paying them to do. That's how it should be. So what I will say is this about Jonathan specifically. If what Diana says is true, and he is not sitting the hell back and letting them do their work, Elliot Wolf, Alonzo Highsmith, Matt Groh, etc., we still don't know if he'll have final say on this. And that's a huge distinction, right? Are you just on the phone calls? Are you in the meetings? Are you throwing out ideas? Or are you pushing hard for some type of outcome? And if he's pushing hard, and especially if Jonathan has final say, I do not know. I am not reporting. I don't think it's even fair to assume that based on what's out there, especially given the reporting so far as we just documented has been contradicted. What I will say, though, if Jonathan is close to pushing or making a call, it is much, 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 much more likely the Patriots will trade back. And again, we don't know this. That's not a fair assumption. But follow me here. Jonathan is pro analytics, right? The Krafts have a sports analytics company. He speaks at the MIT Sloan Sports Analytics Conference every single year, just basically across the river from my apartment. And I have reported about the Patriots being behind in the analytics department for years under Belichick, who, let's be kind here, at best, Jonathan professionally despised. And analytics folks will tell you, and I believe they're right, you've heard this from Gerard Mayo and others already in the process, that the best way to draft is just to get more picks. Give yourself more bites at the apple, more chances to hit, more bets to make. Belichick did this, traded back, infuriated you, annoyed me on deadline, but it worked. We saw it work. This is the philosophy. And so for Jonathan, not only to that thought, but there's a quantifiable upside to that, right? When you're weighing, make the pick, what's the upside of just taking a quarterback versus trading back? And this is key. We don't know the specifics of any offer that's been made or will be made, obviously sitting here midday Wednesday, but the value of all of the picks the Patriots would theoretically get in this trade back is quantifiable, right? And it's going to exceed the value of the third overall pick per modern trade value chart. So when you add up, let's use the Vikings, for example, and this isn't the offer. We don't know, but again, an example. Number three for 11, 23, 2025 first round pick, a 2026 first round pick. The aggregate value of those selections, according to these charts, which teams use to say, hey, should we move back at the first if we get, you know, an extra third and a fourth or whatever, is going to exceed that. Like, that's a win by the numbers. And that's how these trades work. If you're moving up that far, and especially for a quarterback, you are overpaying. You are paying a ransom. That's just how this works. So by the numbers, again, it will be a win for the Patriots. And that, I believe, will be persuasive to Jonathan, someone with a business background, someone with a numbers background. It will also be persuasive to anyone who just likes other quarterbacks, not named Daniels May and Caleb Williams. And the difficulty in arguing against that, not only if your boss believes it, and if he is pushing, if to make a trade back, is that the upside of the number three pick, just taking Drake May, just drafting Jaden Daniels, is more qualitative. And I don't think that will be particularly persuasive to Jonathan, right? You have to argue about the tape, the quality, the talent, the impact, what it feels like, what it looks like, what he sounded like in the interview. And there's a strong case there. Hell, I fully subscribe to that. You can give me four first-round picks, and I'm turning you down. I'm bringing Drake May to New England if I can with a third overall pick. I don't want to waste 2 seconds off the clock. Just hand in the card. Okay. And there are numbers, right? Like we've talked about the numbers to both these players. It's not strictly a qualitative argument. But at the end of the draft, it's still a single bet. And we know that the Patriots believe, because Gerard Mayo has said this, Bill Belichick has done this, and Jonathan Kraft has presided over all of this, that you are more likely to win the more bets you have. Even if, and arguably, the upside of just sticking and picking at number three because of the value of that single selection and the upside, the potential of the players there and the positions they play, quarterback, is much higher than what you would find with later picks and more picks. So that's the difficulty here. If the Patriots do trade back, I'm not saying Jonathan Kraft made that decision. What I'm telling you now, based on what we know, based on what's been reported, is that it makes it more likely they do move back if he's more heavily involved, because that's what he would want to do. Okay, so I know we talk a lot about the draft in this podcast. It's a football podcast. It's a Patriots podcast. What else are we going to do until April 25th? Well, let me tell you, soon enough, we are going to turn our attention to the Celtics and Bruins because they're getting in on the playoff action. And so can you with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where right now you can win up to 100 times your money with as few as 4 correct picks with basketball, hockey, and other sports on Prize Picks. And I'll tell you, look, I like Prize Picks for baseball too. The Red Sox just started up. They're playing the Mariners, the A's. I put a little money down and I got a lot more money back. So download the app today and use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. I did the same. Again, download the app today. Use code CLNS at Prize Picks for a first deposit match up to $100, and you can do the same. Basketball, hockey, and baseball. We got a lot to do until the draft, and you can find it all at Prize Picks. Okay, mailbag time. We're going to breeze through these, then get to the mock draft and get out of here. Jordan, quote, I love Ricky Pearsall, Florida receiver. And Ricky's route running, does he make it to the third round? No. Ricky, I also like a whole lot. You hit it on the head. Excellent receiver. Route runner. He played the X at Florida. It was their leading receiver statistically for the last 2 years. Ran a 4.4 at the combine. Played very well at the Senior Bowl. Good body control. Exceptionally strong hands. You know, doesn't wow you, I would say, from an agility standpoint. Like on tape, he's not snapping off the brakes and kind of leaving you in the dust. But he's a guy who can make an immediate impact, I think, as a starter in the league. Obviously played against good competition. The numbers are there. He basically had as good draft process as you could have, trying to break yourself free from these day two receivers that we've been talking about a whole lot. You know, Roman Wilson's in that group. Michigan receiver also went to the Senior Bowl. Xavier Leggett's in there. So for that reason, I don't think he makes it to 68 in the third round. Could the Patriots trade back up from the third round into the second? Yeah, possibly. The Sports Fellow, on a scale of 1 to 10, how likely is it that the Patriots trade down and take Michael Penix Jr.? Great question. I wish I had a solid number for you. Maybe Jonathan has a number for you. I'm going to go a 2, though, because I'll just reiterate what we talked about in our last episode. And Alex Barth put exceptionally well. The Patriots' most likely outcome is going to be the simple one, the one that we've been talking about all offseason, since the end of last season. Take a quarterback. It's an excellent quarterback class. You have a top three pick. You don't want to make that pick again. I think they're going to stick it and pick it unless they are absolutely blown away. And as someone who has been anti-trade back the last however many months, if they were to say, let's, I don't know, 6 first round picks, then it's a conversation. But then you have to ask yourself, you know, what team is going to offer that kind of insane, you know, draft capital value to move all the way up there? And if you think that's low on a scale of 1 to 10, that's probably exactly how likely it is that the Patriots are able to take and do take that type of offer. Steve, quote, Jonathan Kraft is said to be heavily involved. That could mean anything. Excellent point. From being in the draft room to actually making the pick, can you shed light on what exactly he's doing in this draft? So, as I said earlier, Steve, I don't have any specific reporting on this. I wish I did. But again, I trust Diana on this. Understanding, of course, that heavily involved could be something given to her by other teams who, let's say, been on the phone with Elliott or Matt Groh or Alonzo Highsmith and, you know, again, theoretical mapping out things that they, you know, heard, oh, we have to run it by Jonathan. Or maybe they spoke directly with Jonathan. Or maybe it's someone close to ownership or someone within the Patriots front office, right? It could be any number of people, which then opens it up to a wider interpretation. I will say at least the history of this, when Robert has been in charge and there's no indication he's completely given that up, but let's just look back the last 30 years when we know that was the case. They were in the draft room. You see him on the phone after every pick. Oh, welcome to New England. You know, I heard great things about you. You got a great GPA or wherever you're from, yada, yada. And they kind of sit back and let Bill make the picks and make the decisions. Obviously, they want to talk about it. It's a huge investment. Okay, they're business people. They want to know what that investment's upside is, the likelihood it's going to get a return, and what that return might look like, you know, in the range of outcomes. So I would expect him to be perhaps a little bit more opinionated because these are new hires, right, who don't have as much leverage as the greatest coach of all time who had roster control and could tell them basically to F off like few people can to their bosses and get away with it. So we will see. But I, as far as my thoughts generally on this, I outlined them earlier. You're just going to have to sit with those. Two more. Nick, any chance the Patriots package Matt Judon with their second or third pick to move up? If so, do you see Detroit or Green Bay as possible partners? If not, do you expect an extension before camp? I do not expect an extension before camp. Now, he could have an extension before the season, because I think at that point, right, you're in training camp, you're in the preseason, you're seeing him in pads. What does this look like? Right now, he's basically recovered, which is great. But he's an older pass rusher. He's someone you want to see. How motivated is he to get that extension? Like, so long as the carrot's dangling, don't give it to him. Let him chase it a little bit and see where that's, how far he can go with it. Now, obviously, I don't think he's going to be happy with what I believe off the top of my head is a $6.5 million base salary. And so that might work the other way. Instead of chase carrot, he's going to kind of sit back and be on the lower field doing one of these for the folks on YouTube as I lean back and try to speak louder. That he was doing last year, and that led to the extension. So as far as packaging him with the second or third pick, I don't like it, but I would understand it, because I think at some point, while they are going to play the young kids, and while he is someone, as we know, is on the back end of his prime here, you still need adults in the room to say, this is how we do business, to carry out Mayo's message, to be a sounding board for Mayo from the locker room. And to be that kind of intermediary that goes both ways, right? And there are a few players who can do that. Matt Slater's not one of them anymore. He's management. He's Mayo's right-hand man. You need people in the locker room the coach can relate to, players can relate to, and brings everyone together, particularly in tough times. I think they missed Matt Judon last year. I know we did at the podium when there were losses upon losses upon losses, and he was saying the things that we just got to push forward. This isn't good enough, right? But we can do it. We have enough here, the things you want to hear in tough times, because more tough times are coming. I would keep him, but if they did move up, let's say into the back end of the first round, and he was part of that trade, and I do think Detroit and Green Bay are excellent possible trade partners to Yeliznik, I would understand it. I just want to know who's going to be that person that I just detailed, because Dietrich Wise doesn't have as much sway, even though he's been a captain, I think, as a Matt Judon. Just look at the resumes. Everyone knows in the locker room what their teammates are paid, what they've done on the field, their stats. Like, Matt Judon's got that juice I think the Patriots are going to need. For every reason I just detailed. Okay, flailing away. This is the guy's actual handle or name or chosen identity on the internet. Quote, better package, Drake May, Suamataia, Kingsley, Suamataia, the offensive tackle from BYU, Ricky Pearsall, we just talked about. Or, so three of them, offensive tackle and receiver, Michael Penix, J.C. Latham, offensive tackle from Alabama, Brian Thomas Jr., receiver from LSU, and Minnesota's first-round pick next year. So I would understand people picking the latter package. Michael Penix and J.C. Latham and Brian Thomas Jr. Oh, and another first-round pick around Michael Penix, where I might have a starter at offensive tackle and receiver and more draft assets. Let's go, baby. No, I'm taking Drake May. The difference between May and Penix, in my mind, and Penix, I think, honestly, at this point, has been a bit overrated. He is just too great. Not just right now as prospects, but I think down the road, the upside, the ability, everything the Patriots should be chasing right now, that's the guy I want. I'm not willing to sacrifice that for what really amounts to, in your scenario here, two extra first-round picks, because you're moving back. It might even really, let's call it one and a half, right? There's an extra pick in there and then slightly better players, because I really like Pearsall and a lot of those day two receivers that we've talked about for months. Kingsley Suamataia, talked about him last episode. I'm in on those guys, and I am especially in on Drake May. I just can't turn away the Drake. Okay, on to our mock draft. And I was surprised when I looked back through my notes that it had been so long since we did one of these. It was another solo episode. And the Patriots picks actually weren't the same. The draft order changed in the time last two and a half months that I did this and what we're doing right now. And what I also discovered was one of the better ideas we've ever had in this Pats Interference podcast. The music. You hear that? It's mock season, baby. The end of mock season, because draft season is about to be upon us. So let's roll through my final Patriots mock draft, which I will say comes a year after I nailed four picks last year when the Patriots met a 10-member rookie class in 2023. So keep these names in mind. Understanding also, since the last episode was called Our Most Likely Patriots Draft Picks and Alex Barth, I had a great conversation. I am intentionally spicing these up now. I stand by everything I said in that last episode. You'll hear a couple of names, not all of them, but those guys, again, I stand by, even though they might not make this list. Okay, starting in seventh round. Here we go. Mark Perry, safety at a TCU, goes at pick number 231 overall, the last Patriots pick right now as it stands. 6 foot flat, 213 pounds, runs a 4.4. He's versatile. He's not a great playmaker. He's not good in man-to-man, but he is one of the few, and you can count him on one hand, safeties expected to be drafted, who runs in the 4.4s. So he fills that free safety role. Reportedly had dinner with the Patriots after his pro day and a couple of Zooms since. Pick him up in the seventh round, add to your depth. Maybe he's a special teams player, or he just gets cut because he's a seventh round pick. In the sixth round, number 193 overall, come on down, Travis Glover, Georgia State offensive tackle. And you are going to feel the earth move underneath your feet as he comes on down. 6'6", 317 pounds. Travis took a 30 visit, no longer top 30 visits because that's not cool anymore, to Foxborough. The Patriots also saw him at the Hula Bowl. They saw him at his pro day. Massive developmental player who played left tackle at Georgia State. They need bodies there. They need big bodies down there. There's a lot that's interesting about Travis, even if we might look back in a couple of years and be like, okay, we thought he was going to develop like a starter. Did we forget he was a projected sixth-round pick going right in the sixth round? For now, we're not there. I don't care. Take him right there to add a little bit of depth. We're going to have an offensive tackle coming up. Also in the sixth round, this name you'll remember if you listened to our last episode, at number 180 overall, DeCamerion Richardson, Mississippi State, 6'2", 188 pounds. Another 30 visitor. Big athletic corner. This is an upside pick, right? Patriots look at his tape and go say with better coaching, he doesn't finish with zero interceptions, which was a real thing that happened, despite playing as many games as he did as a starter at Mississippi State. But they bet on the athletic traits, the ability, stuff you can't find here, and try to bulk up what is a very small cornerback's room. All right, moving into the fifth round, number 137. Houston Christian edge, Jalix Hunt, 6'3", 252 pounds. This is a dude who started his college career as a hybrid safety linebacker at Cornell. And I know Bill is gone, but man, when you have someone who has played literally all three levels of the defense in college, transfers to Houston Christian, where he had 13 and a half sacks the past 2 years, over 21 starts, he's versatile. Again, provides depth at a key premium position. We'll be able to develop him behind Judon, Josh Uche, Dietrich Wise, and Anthony Jennings. I like this pick for the Patriots. Someone who also, if you look at Hunt over the last couple of weeks, is one of those risers of draft boards. Daniel Jeremiah has him in his top 70. Patriots here get him at 137 because that's really where he is on the consensus draft expert boards. Moving into the fourth round, start of day three. Number 103, tight end Cade Stover, Ohio State. This is a copy and paste from my original mock draft 2.5 months ago. 6'4", 251 pounds. He is a strong dude who fits the traditional Y mold. In line, next to the offensive tackle, pinning, pulling, blocking at the second level. But he is also athletic enough to play in space and has excellent body control. So the stats are fine. That's it. Lowercase f, but 41 catches, 576 yards last year, 5 touchdowns. And he was first team all Big Ten. And he was first team all Big Ten just 2 years after flipping from defense to tight end. That's a player who might not have dangerous long speed, but is fluid enough as an athlete and raw enough at his position that in the fourth round, I go, he won't start this year. But when Austin Hooper leaves in free agency next year, I feel comfortable with him as our tight end number two, and they land him here at the start of day number three. Okay, third round. Late Friday night, the Patriots are picking at number 68. It's got to be a tackle. It's got to be a receiver. Which is it? It's a tackle. Blake Fisher, Notre Dame, 6'5", 310 pounds. He had a 30 visit. He met with the Patriots at the combine. He is athletic. He started his college career at left tackle, which we know the Patriots really care about. Because when Elliott Wolf was asked about Chuck Okorafor possibly being the starting left tackle, he said, well, he did in college. Never mind that Chuck Okorafor was drafted before COVID. Anyway, Blake Fisher, the last 2 years, started at right tackle for Notre Dame. He fits the Packers mold when it comes to athletic prototypes in terms of quickness and short shuttle. I don't think he fits just based on his playing style and his tape. Scott Peters, who again, we've talked about here, is just grabbing people in meetings, and that's the kind of dude that he is. But I think Fisher, again, from a long-term developmental standpoint, they look and go, he can play left tackle. He's got the traits. He's got the pedigree. We'll bring him in, pick him in the third round. Second round, I know Kingsley Suamataio is my top pick, and the Patriots will draft this dude. Draft that we have with Alex Barr. But here, I think it's going to be receiver. I think they might even trade back from 34. But for our purposes now, we are going to go with draft Pat's draft Twitter favorite, Xavier Leggett, South Carolina. 6'1", 221 pounds. He is exceptionally strong. He is an immediate accelerator. He only had one season of production down in South Carolina. Go Cox. I say again, go Cox. But he had 1,255 receiving. This is the dude you could put into sweeps, into handoffs, into screens, and let him continue to develop with a skill set that, again, speaks to the Packers' ideals. Run after catch, return ability. He, again, is not a burner, but he can be a deep threat the way that he is able to accelerate immediately and I think could learn to tempo his route. So he attacks all three levels. He's good in space, grades on his own. I thought about A.D. Mitchell from Texas, but to me, you want Leggett as someone who can play all three positions of receiver. X, Z, Y, Ladd McConkey, I bet, is gone at this point. He has been a favorite. He was my old pick here at number 34. For now, Xavier Leggett. Also loved by Field Yates, plugged into New England, to the Patriots at number 34. And that leaves us at number 3. Do they stick and pick? Do they trade back? Who's it going to be? You know, if you've been listening to the show, the name I'm about to say. And it is Drake May, quarterback, North Carolina. I spent a whole episode on Drake, so we're just going to leave it here. I think it's time to make the pick. I think it's time to draft your new face of the franchise. There are no guarantees, of course. It's the draft. All the drafts at casino. Every pick is a bet. Hits and misses. Wins and losses. The win you have here with Drake May, and a new coach and a GM and a quarterback, a timeless prospect who has fixable issues with footwork, is a bet you make every single time. Let's just hope he's here at 3. And if he's not, Jaden Daniels, I think, should be the pick for the same reason. He is a rare quarterback prospect. He fills the need and is someone that could take you to new heights. So I like him as much as May. No. And that's why Drake May is the final pick in my final mock draft. Okay, last segment here. Mail fan with Carlos. You can follow him at LOS Talks Pat. Great 10, 15 minutes here with him. And if you want to join the show, again, you got to email me or DM or receipt from your recent donation to Boston Children's Hospital, and then just ask a mailbag question, and we'll have you on the show. Thank you to everyone for listening. I hope you have enjoyed the pre-draft process. This episode is about to end with Carlos, and then we will be back on Friday. I promise this time. Friday, recapping what the Patriots did in the first round, and then what to look forward to. Probably more on Saturday. We're going to skip day 2 because there will be a quick turnaround. And then we'll be back next week with a full breakdown of the Patriots draft class. And we'll see you then.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, we are double dipping for a second straight week here at Mail Fan. We go from Joe Asciotti back to Carlos from the Bay Area. Not from the Bay Area last week, though. Carlos flew out for Pads and Pints, our draft party at Vitamin C Brewery. It was great to meet you in person. We sent you home with some memorabilia. You had a long flight home, but you're back on the show. So I imagine life is pretty good.
Yeah, it was really, really cool being out there meeting all of you. Like you said, some memorabilia. I have it right here. I have it behind me, too, so I didn't come back empty-handed, and yeah, it was an experience I won't forget for sure.
Good man. As we know, and I said last week on that episode, you know, all the money went to Boston Children's. And to update the folks who didn't get to go or haven't seen any tweets since, we raised over $8,000. And Carlos is back because he has given more money to Boston Children's, which, again, you can too if you want to join the Mail Fan segment. We've answered every other mailbag question except for his today, and then we'll get out of here. But this is going to be the longest Mail Fan segment in podcast history, which I don't think anyone really cares about except for maybe me, you, and a few other people. But we'll keep this thing going and growing and start here. Your question was this, quote, do you expect some of Belichick's draft strategies to remain the norm, or do you expect Wolf to have a totally different game plan? For example, leaving the draft, having made more picks than they came in with, reaching on players, or drafting small school guys. Okay, so as always, your answer to your own question is what?
So to begin with, I do think that there will be some overlap with the way that Wolf ran things compared to how Belichick ran things. I think, like how I said, them having made more draft picks than what they came in with, I think that's still Elliott Wolf's MO. I might be completely wrong, but that's the idea I get, that they're going to be trading back or accumulating more picks and pretty much just building through the draft. So I do think that will stay the same. I personally question whether or not they're going to still look at small school guys. That's like the big one for me. Both small school guys and reaching on some small school guys, as we know from the draft with Cole Strange. But yeah, so I do think there will be some overlap, but I personally feel like it's going to be a different vibe. So the whole reason that I asked this question was because everyone says like, oh, that's not the way the Patriots draft, or that's not the Patriots draft strategy. And in reality, no one really knows what it is anymore. It's not going to be the same thing that it's been for the past two decades. So I do think Wolf will have his own game plan, but it won't stray away too much as far as like accumulating draft picks or pretty much just getting the best value dependent on what their needs are.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Because we've heard so much this offseason about the value of trading back. Like Gerard saying the best way to draft is just have more picks. And Elliott's like, we're open for business, though we would want a quarterback. And honestly, I don't know if it's just because it's the week of the draft, but I feel like I don't hear divergent strategies anymore. Like everyone's throwing the same bleep at the wall to see what sticks, whether it's we're open for business or we want to get more picks or we're willing to trade up if the price is right. Like obviously. So what I would say is this. I think you are going to see the Patriots operate more towards the consensus board, right? Like we understand already they're not going for players that fit specific roles that bring the system to life as Belichick built it, an offense and defense. What they're looking for are just good football players. Then we'll build the system around them, which everyone claims to do, but doesn't always execute. And so to that end, there are tendencies when you look at some of Green Bay's draft history, you know, for certain positions. I've said this about offensive linemen. They're versatile. They're quicker than average, okay? Mm-hmm. They're often more experienced. Receivers want some return ability there. Ty Montgomery, obviously, was a high pick out of Stanford for them. And he played a little bit running back, but, you know, is a perfect example of that. Mm-hmm. As far as a small school, big school delineation, I think it's a bit of a broad stroke, right? But if you prove yourself to a level like at the Senior Bowl or the East-West Shrine Game, that's when you get more attention because, you know, as we knew from Mike Reese, and there are other examples of this as well, Elliott was really high on Greg Jennings very early as a scout coming out of Western Michigan. Brett Favre went to Southern Miss to go way back when his father, Ron Wolf, traded for Favre, didn't draft him, but traded a first-round pick in his first year for a guy who went the second round. And so it's a matter of a lot of things, but what they're going to do is trust their eye test, which, to get back to my original point, is what everyone largely does. It's not an analytics-friendly, I would say, front office now, and really wasn't before. But I will ask you this then, because you know we've heard so much about Jonathan Kraft, right? The variable there is unknown. How are you feeling just as a fan about that part of this as we get closer to the third pick?
As a fan, I honestly feel pretty confident. I think it's just because of the optimism that there's change happening in the building. As like we can't say that the past couple drafts have gone well with the old regime. So just the fact that there's going to be a new regime running things their own way. And even if it is Jonathan Kraft, who knows? No one really knows what his mindset is behind like the picks, the players in the draft, or just prospects in general. So I think because of that, there is sort of like an optimism, at least for me personally, because of the change that's coming.
I think that's a healthy attitude generally, Carlos, right? Yeah. Like, if you want to live your longest, if you want to be your happiness, choose optimism, choose joy. Granted, it's been a little bit more difficult around these parts for quite some time. C4 and 13, 8 and 9, and before that, 7 and 9. Mm-hmm. But as I said, you know, at the top of the episode, I think Jonathan's presence would, you know, and it depends on how heavily is, right? If he is involved at the top. There's wanting input. There's I'm the boss. Mm-hmm. Keep me in the loop. And then there's we're going to do this and you're going to listen to me because I cut your checks. And I think if it leans towards the latter, you know, because he's a little bit more analytics inclined, as someone who speaks at the sports, the Sloan Sports Analytics Conference every year at MIT, they own a sports analytics company that operates adjacent to the Patriots football operations headquarters, that might make it more likely. But it just gets so toxic. You might have a better perspective out there in the Bay Area, not listening to local sports talk radio and TV, just to be like, exactly what you said. Whatever will be, and it has to be an upgrade, right?
Yeah, exactly. And we can't, it's not much harder to improve than what's been happening the past couple of years. I think that's pretty much the way I view it. It hasn't been a good track record. I don't remember which class it is. I don't know if it's 2021 that we only have like one or two players left from that whole draft class. So if you're building off of something like that, I don't see how you can get much worse pretty much. So that's where the optimism comes from for me. But I do think that as far as like the whole new strategy, how pretty much everyone's been saying they're going to go for athletes. They're going to go for pretty much good football players.
Upside. Yes.
Yeah. I don't understand why that's like an issue or why people wouldn't like that. At least give them one shot, give them 1 or 2 years. Like you never know. They're not always going to draft your favorite player. That's pretty much like the way I've been viewing it. So even if they don't get your favorite player and they do get someone that you've never heard of, but it's a hit, like, how can you complain about that?
Yeah, I mean, look, people here, because you didn't spend that long on the East Coast, will complain just to complain. And this isn't to totally dismiss, you know, concerns that are warranted by ownership involvement. I've categorically disavowed any ownership involvement, and that covers Jonathan Kraft. Because he's heavily involved, that's a bad thing. What I will say, though, is as far as, you know, the players and the upside being too much of a risk, just get, like, good, decent players. The Patriots have been playing with red chip players, white chip players for too long. Like, how long has it been? Is it really 2018? Gronk, Edelman, the defensive coordinators were like, you know, I got to stay up an extra 20 minutes to make sure my game plan is intact because this dude might hurt me even when we have the perfect play called. They just don't have those players. So if you're going to take a swing, and especially a swing at 3, 34, 68, go to the fourth round, 102 at the top of day 3, it might as well be for players who, yes, carry a lower floor, but you really can't go slower. Again, you're picking third. That will get you back to the top faster, even if they come with a quote-unquote little bit of risk. Because all the draft, as I've said, is a casino. It's bets and bets and bets. It's hits and misses. You understand the rate of success is so low. I didn't believe this when I first started covering the team and dive into the draft, but I lean more towards that, especially in the position they're in, these kind of high-risk, high-reward type of players.
Yeah, exactly. And it seems like such a basic thought, but on my drive to work today, I was just thinking to myself, what if both Jaden Daniels and Drake May are busts? Like, I've really been operating under the whole assumption that, like, one of them's going to hit, one of them's going to bust. And we have to pick, or we have to hope that the correct one falls to us. But in reality, both of them might not work out. I believe it's a much better draft class compared to Mac Jones's draft class, but look at that draft class. Trevor Lawrence is the only first round quarterback that's still on his original team. So it's not a guarantee. Why not just take the risk, especially when you're picking this high and you're hoping that you would never pick this high again, at least not in the next decade or so.
Yeah. And I will say too, you know, the bet that I just referenced, making these picks, will these players pan out or won't they, is also a bet on yourself. And there's no team that's going to take a player and say, yeah, we won't get the best out of him, but we'll get something close and that'll be good enough. They believe in themselves. That's why all of these men have these jobs, coaches, GMs, scouts, et cetera.
Yeah.
But the dynamic of a player going into an environment and whether or not that environment, from the coaching, from the protection, from the weapons, gets the best out of him, like I've said this before and others have too, I find more often teams fail quarterbacks more than quarterbacks fail the team. And that might not be the case with Zach Wilson, who I was not high on. The Jets took second. I count that as a win for me. Another long list of L's for the Jets. But, you know, maybe there was a world in which he went somewhere that had an offensive coordinator, you know, that wasn't fired after a couple of years and then replaced by Nathaniel Hackett, an offensive line that's still not looking to seek, you know, talent and starters and not latching on to 36, 37-year-old Tyron Smith. The point being, even if they do draft the quarterback, it's not only that we won't know if they're a hit or a miss, a bust or someone booming, is that that will be dependent on the Patriots to surround him. And this brings us back to, I think, the idea of, you know, whether or not you believe in them and their strategy. Elliot Wolf's on record saying what about how he wants to support a quarterback?
That's like a question for me.
Yeah, it's a question for you. Yeah, long-winded, as always.
just weaponize the offense. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, I want to do everything possible to support this guy. Everyone in the building to make sure that he is supported. And what did we see the last couple of years to bring it up for the final time before we get this new draft when it was Mac Jones, right? Did he get that support?
I don't believe so, and I don't think anybody else would think so either.
Right, and that can be, you know, not a binary thing, right? Mac failed Patriots, Patriots failed Mac. It was both. But the point is, I think with this change, it's not only that this is something new. I think that they're I don't want to say holistic, that's strong, and a little bit different. But their mindset going into this of the type of players we're going to look at are just good and will chase upside, but are also guys that we will support and we will devote and sacrifice for, as opposed to constantly asking that of them for us in the sake of the system, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it definitely makes sense. I even think back to backtracking a little bit how you brought up Jonathan Kraft being more or heavily involved as Diana Rossini reported. But I was watching Rob Ninkovich's podcast the other day, and I was looking at his old clips, and I can't remember who he was interviewing, but he was telling somebody that he was in the suite with Jonathan Kraft and Robert Kraft watching one of the games. And when I believe it was like Mac threw an interception, and Jonathan Kraft was just absolutely livid, and he was very vocal about how upset he was. Part of that, just having him watch the game from afar rather than like, or seeing it as like from a fan's perspective, I guess you could say, seeing that the offense was dysfunctional, that's kind of where my hope comes from too. Just that he sees like our offense was not good, like for lack of a better term, it sucked. So I do trust that he will give that input in the draft room.
Yeah, and I think too, people who, you know, want to detract from Elliot Wolf, and I had a long story come out today just about, you know, him and his process and some of the I don't want to say arguments, but disagreements he had with the previous regime, they would say now, well, he told us last week that they have NFL receivers, they have NFL tight ends, they have NFL offensive linemen. What is he looking at? I don't care if this guy's dad is in the Hall of Fame. What is he looking at now? To which I would say, as I wrote last week after Elliot delivered those comments, he wasn't talking to you. His goal was not to be as honest as possible with the fans. His job was to support his new players and his new underlings in the front office and to tell everyone else in the league, yeah, we might do anything at three, just in case you're willing to do something exceptionally stupid. So I get why people are not as optimistic as you are, or I would say trusting, maybe not optimistic that I am. I want to see how the draft goes. They've said a lot of things this offseason, the Patriots, from the Kraft to Mayo to Elliot Wolf, that have not come true and, in fact, been the complete opposite. But what really matters is these picks coming up, whether they take a quarterback or not. So I'll get you out on this. I didn't prepare you for this, but sometimes it's how that goes here on the show. Just a draft prediction, not what you want to happen, but something that happens. It could be at number three. It could be a position. It could be a player. It could be a trade. Something you think will happen for the Patriots over the next couple of days.
I think the lock in my mind, again, I might be completely wrong, but I think the lock in my mind is that they will draft an offensive tackle in the third round. I've been thinking like, okay, second round, because there's going to be a run in the first round. But I do believe that they trust Chooks. I do think that they are comfortable starting him at left tackle. So I think because of that, the need kind of gets pushed back just a little bit. And I understand that the wide receiver class is deep, but I can't imagine them thinking that, oh, we'll just wait until the third round to get our, you know, one of our star receivers, or hopefully a receiver that's going to be in the organization for the next 10 years. So I do think that they will try their best to pair up a quarterback at three, which that's my other lock, but a quarterback at three with a receiver in round two, and then a tackle in either round three or round four. But I'm guessing it's round three.
Okay. I like it. Yeah. A multifaceted breakdown, prediction of exactly what the Patriots are going to do. I happen to agree with you. I won't go as strong, but it's also funny, you know, going through our day two, day three locks, right, that we're publishing, we're writing about mock drafts, this and that. Different versions of the same old bleep, if we're being honest. But you can watch more tape, you get more a better feeling about it. Guy like Blake Fisher from Notre Dame starts to stand out to me. Patrick Paul might be around there. Kingsley Suamata-Ito probably won't be from BYU, but we'll see. And that's the beauty of the draft, is nobody knows. Yeah. We all have such certainty going into it and coming out of it. And then everyone's going to throw up their hands and be like, this guy actually stinks in camp. And we'll go on from there. But follow Carlos at Los, L-O-S, Talks Pats on X/Twitter. You know, the best to follow as far as aggregating all of the news, putting it out there, one-stop shopping from me, from MassLive, from The Globe, from ESPN, Sports Illustrated, wherever you find your news. Follow Carlos. Thank you again for coming on the show. Thank you for donating. And I hope you enjoy the draft. I will be working, but I hope you were at home kicking your feet up, getting exactly what you want, quarterback, receiver, and offensive tackle.
Hopefully. I'll be on Twitter or X a lot, trying to see any types of rumors or any news that gets put out. So I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it. And thanks for having me on, though.
You got it.